Yeah, perhaps it's a good idea to talk about God. God is a very confusing idea for many people. There are many people who are told that there is something or someone or a being or a state of being called God. People are very confused because you can see that in many cultures they use a word God or a similar kind of word. And they all say there's only one God, and yet at the same time they say that the God of the neighbor is not their God. Well, if there's only one God, then there is only one God, and the God of the neighbor is the same as your God. So if you put the water in a carafe or in a calabash or in a bottle, it's still the same water. The labels on the bottle don't really matter. And so the different brands and different brandings of the religions is not really essential, because the let's say the churches in that way are a handle to get to the concept of God. But as the chicken needs to break out of the egg, then the people who are dealing with the church need to break through the and they need to crack out of the church to be able to get to the religion. And that's why I would like to address the concept of God. And sort of get it away from this mythical or mystical word with an undefined meaning over which many wars are being fought, and go back to what are we actually dealing with when we are using a word God, and what is actually being meant by the word God, in which way does this word God relate to the universe, or does it only relate to us? And so I'd like to dismantle some of the layers of that word God, I say break the bottle so that we can get to the essence that's contained within it. And the starting point for that is the word God itself. God is only a word. It is a sound. It is you can repeat it as often as you like. I once had an experience that I was driving in my car and I started repeating the word egg a number of times, and I discovered that after a while the word egg just totally lost its meaning. Just was when you're gazing at something, you're looking out at something, and you're looking at it again and again and again and again, the mind simply blanks out. That's a property of the mind, so that it can process new information, because our survival depends on being able to intelligently and competently interact with change. As I described in the story of relating the known to the unknown, our body is an instrument by which we can fit in a dynamic environment, because our body has that dynamic within it. Our body has the whole dynamic of the universe within it. So I would like to build a bridge between the word God, which is meaningless, to the function of God as we experience it within our body. And there are a couple of things which I'd like to do. First, I need to dematerialize the word God, and then I need to demystify the meaning of the word God, and then I need to come to an understanding of what is God about, what does God mean, what does it refer to. So that we can then come to, well, how do we experience that? How can we work with that? Or in which way are we that? So, in that sense, I want to move the word God as something on paper or something in the world outside of us to something outside of that world, outside of us. As I mentioned, the word God is used by very many different cultures. They all ascribe different capacities to it, different meanings to it, and it's in the same as the stories of the heroes. Anytime anybody becomes famous, all kind of anecdotes will be described to that individual. So it is said that Abraham Lincoln was asked how tall should somebody be, because Abraham Lincoln was quite a tall guy. And his answer was, well, tall enough that his feet can reach the ground, which of course is a metaphor that you need to be firmly rooted in where you stand. But then, of course, if you're firmly rooted where you stand, you cannot get one step ahead. So he was trying to say, or somebody was trying to say, that you actually need to connect where you are to where you can be. And perhaps it was not Abraham Lincoln who said that, but somebody who just said that Abraham Lincoln said it, and as a result, people can then connect interesting ideas to an interesting guy. So in that same way, all kind of famous people are supposed to have said something, and people can take the words from that. For example, everybody knows that Einstein supposedly said E equals mc squared. Maybe it was his first wife who actually said that. There were others who have said something which is very similar to that. But when people talk about E equals mc squared, do they actually mean the same by it as what was meant when that expression was first formulated? We are going to this edge where we use words for things and we try to give meaning for things, be it expression of how tall you should be it an expression like E equals mc squared, or be it an expression of God. We need to be very careful in what we are actually doing when we are dealing with a word. The word is simply a word, and as Maturana and Varela pointed out, a neurobiologist, neurophysiologist, that words point to things in the world that we can see or find around us. But the word is not the thing that it points at. It's like a road sign which points towards a city, but it doesn't get to that city. It isn't that city. So words, likewise, are not the things that they describe. And scientists still have to realize that when they talk about scientific objects, they're actually dealing with an object in language, so that it is the scientific objects are linguistic objects. They're not real. Scientists are operating in a model space. And I need to bring this in. I need to point this out, because when people go from scientific space to a religious space, they're still using words in the same way that scientists use words. Scientists would use equations, and churches and religion would use rituals, but both of them are meant to connect what we can think to the world around us. So we need to understand that the word God is not God. And when you look at the origin of the word God, it comes from the Sanskrit word gut. There is another Sanskrit word, deva, which became the basis of the French word Dieu. So then you can see that when the French talk about Dieu and the English talk about God, the Germanic people have the word Gott in different ways in their vocabulary. When you go back to the Sanskrit, you can see that God and Deva is not quite the same. In Sanskrit, they're talking about spiritual qualities. You have to say the distinction between the process of creation and the process of creation as it operates within living beings. So when we're using words like God or Dieu, we should look beyond the mystical or mythical interpretation of the word God. We should try to get to the understanding of what's behind it. We should go from the level of people saying E equals mc squared to a scientist doing calculations based on that formula of E equals mc squared. And so for me, I realized that the word God actually is an equation, and that as a result, it is no longer somebody saying how things are, or it is not something specifying how things should be or could be, but the word God actually, as an equation, equates things. It helps us understand how things relate to each other. And the interesting part about the word God is that it is the word that describes, say, an equation sign. when you look at the letters of the word God, and of course this is a word trickery, so just follow the idea, because what I try to do is get away from the word God as having a specific mystical or mythical meaning. I want to get rid of the word God as being a definer of right and wrong. I specifically want to get rid of God as cause for war or peace. And I want to get to the understanding that God, whichever culture it uses, in whichever way it is used, always refers to the same principle of universal creation, one way or the other. And if it refers to the process of universal creation, then evidently it applies to everything. Evidently it applies to everywhere, and evidently it even defines itself. So when understood at that level, then all of the meanings that religions give to the word God, and all of the allegories and metaphors that are used for defining the notion of God, can be understood much more clearly, much more explicitly, when we bring it down to the level of the equation. What I'm specifically trying to do is to get to the deeper understanding of the what and the why and the because of the notion of God, because we are really dealing with the principle of universal creation, which means that we are dealing with the creation of the universe. It also means that we are dealing with the creation of every part of the universe, but it also means that we are dealing with the creation of ourselves as part of the universe. But what I wish to come to at the end is the realization that we actually operate this process of God within us, and that as a result of that we are creators in creation. But in order to do that, I need to come back to this notion that God, G-O-D, spells generator, operator, and destructor. This is actually already how they understood that in India. And I want to add a fourth component to that, because if you generate something, if you create something out of nothing, if you can maintain it, operate it, there's something in that environment of nothing, and then you can redissolve it, the something, into the nothing, you can destroy it, then of course that is meaningful only if you can relate the something to the nothing in a coherent sense. You need to be able to integrate the something and the nothing, as I described in the other story, linking the known and the unknown. It is necessary to understand that the something will come out of the nothing, and perhaps it is more useful to realize that whenever we refer to somethings, we need to understand how it still connects to the nothing, or the something connects to the nothing. And in that way we need to be very careful, because in the word thinking we also have the word thing as king. So we need to get out of this notion that things are things, and we need to connect them up to the nothings, which is found at the basis of every religion. So in the word God, we are actually describing the relationship between the something and the nothing. You need to generate something, you need to operate something, you need to be able to destroy something, but more importantly, you need to integrate those three. So it's not just having the three letters of God, but you need to have the fourth letter of the I for the integrate, the identify, the immerse. It is the pivot where those three letters of God then can connect. So having gone from the word God to the formula of God, I now want to turn the formula of God, I-G-O-D, I-God, I want to turn that into an operator. Because if you're generating something, if you're operating something, and if you're destroying something, and you need to have that in integration, then what is actually going on, and what do we know that's actually doing that? Because at this level, I come back to that in a bit, we are dealing with equation sign. We are dealing with something that can become, that can be itself, that can unbecome, that can dissolve itself. So the integration and the integrity of the something lies in that relationship between the everything which is nothing. So bear with me, just follow with the thoughts. Don't try to analyze them, because we are now getting outside of the scope of language. So I now need to use language in the poetic sense. I need to use words where words cannot go. I need to point out that the word God is not a word anymore, but it is a placeholder for something which we try to define in the use of language, but which is not part of language. It's like a parking space at the entrance of the parking place where people cannot park, because otherwise you cannot reach the parking place. And so in that sense, we need words which are non-words, which are a description of nothings, like the axle in a wheel of a bicycle. We need to specify the absence of something in the things that we use to describe them. This is also part of the whole concept and theory of lacunations, that in a bicycle we use lacunations, we use the absence of things in a very defined way. So you have the wheel that can freely rotate on the axle, and that is the core of the activity of the bicycle. But you likewise have the axle by which the pedal can drive the chain, which can drive the wheel. So again, you have this lacunation within the system where things can turn freely, but in this perspective, you can control it. You can control the speed of the bicycle. Likewise, you have this axle of the steering column of the wheel, as a result of which you can compensate for the oscillations of the bicycle. So you can use the freedom of choice to work with the fixed degree of freedom in that bicycle in the steering column. And you also have the bicycle bell, where with the freedom of choice you can ring the bell to signal things to the environment around you. So we are very competent at using nothing in something. The bicycle wheel is just one example. All of the machineries that we have, even the electron flows in computers, the interplay between the moving electron and the telephone wire, and the fixed electron of the copper of the telephone wire, are at that same level of the interchange between the known and the unknown, the thing and the nothing, the physics and the phasics. In all I do, it's always about the relation between the physics and the phasics and what happens at the interplay. And in the interplay, we can no longer refer to things, because the capacity, quality of things gets lost. So we need to go to the end of words, but we need to go beyond the end of words. We need to understand that language is the result of languaging, and words is the result of wording, and that the words that we use were created for defining a specific relationship that we have to our environment. And the word God is a very specific word which defines to how we generate, operate, destroy, and integrate things in that environment. So we generate a freedom of choice in the bicycle wheel, in the axle of the pedals, in the steering column, and in the bicycle bell, as a result of which we can operate that, and at some point we can take the bicycle apart, and that whole capacity of doing things disappears with it. So the word God describes that capacity to interplay in that relationship between physics and phasics. And that means that the word itself is at that boundary between physics and phasics. So the word God is a word and a non-word at the same time. It is what in mathematics would be called a singularity. It is something that turns inside out on itself and is its own opposite. That's like when you pull the plug on a bath, the vortex on the one side is where the water goes into the plug, and on the other side you have a vortex where the water comes out to the of the plug and goes back into the ocean. In the same way we have in the universe a black hole connected to a white source, we have singularities all over in the universe, and these singularities are the places where the nothings and the things are connected. In the black hole the things turn back into nothing, in the white source the nothing turns back into a thing. And so the word God describes what happens at the interface, at that transition point between the thing and the nothing. And what's fascinating is that the anagram of God, or specifically I God, explains it all. Explains what happens, because if you generate something, if you operate something, and you destroy something, plus you integrate that, then what you're dealing with is the creation of a boundary and the destruction of a boundary. You create a distinction, you destroy a distinction. George Spencer Brown described that in his book The Laws of Form, that if you make a distinction, then you actually are participating in this process of universal creation in the mental set. And when you understand that it is all about the boundary, then you can see that the boundary is the most fundamental principle in universal creation. The boundary, and I studied that in engineering school, my whole work was pivoted on that. That if you have a boundary, something will reflect back from it. If there is no boundary, then there will be no reflection. So if you throw a ball against a wall, the ball will bounce back. If you throw the ball but there is no wall, for example there's a door opening, the ball will not bounce back. If the wall would be invisible, then you throw the ball will still come back. And in a way that's what we see when the cells divide, the matter of the cell becomes the molecular movement of the cell, becomes the atomic movement of the cell. Then at the subatomic level something happens and we see two balls bouncing back. So we know that there is an invisible wall. So even if the wall is invisible, we can see it because something bounces back. So that is where we can understand that if the wall is invisible but also the ball is invisible, then we will still notice if something hits you back. If you do an action and something comes back to you, you will see the boomerang effect of something that you put out come back. Of course, it is mixed in with all the other things that are coming from elsewhere, that have been put out from elsewhere. And so in our life, we learn to discern between what you put out and what bounces back, and what other people put out and how you bounce that back. And that's also why I have this whole project called Math and Musics, to look in detail at what happens in the cells when they communicate something to their environment, or when their environment communicates something to them, how that leads to a system of feed-forward and feedback loops, which are like the notes of a composition of the internal music in the body, which is the foundation of the composition of the body as a whole. In that feed-forward and the feedback loop, you are also dealing with a boundary. Something bounces between one cell and another, and it then bounces back again. So at the core of that is the idea of a boundary. And when you look at the boundary as a whole, at its most fundamental level, then you can see that the boundary will have one side, it will have another side. And depending on where you stand, you could say that the one side is yes and the other side is the opposite of that, because if you go through the boundary the phase inverts, so you will have a no at the other side. But then you can see that yes and no is actually the phase inversion of what happens in the boundary. So there is no real yes and no. If you would move from the one side of the boundary to the other, then God would be the devil, or the devil would be God. Good would be evil and evil would be good. By the way, the word evil and the word devil, of course, is the same. And evil is the word live spelled backwards. So That's what you see in a boundary. When you throw the ball against the wall, it will bounce back, it will phase invert. But the phase inversion is what we now call the quantum change. So if a quantum changes, it actually goes from one phase to the other. It reverts its phase. That is very explicit in tetrionics. So at that level, we can see that the word God describes the boundary. The boundary is the same principle as the change of phase. The change of phase is the same as the principle of the quantum. So the word God in that sense describes the change of a quantum in the universe, and at that level the quantum will be the one state or it will be the other state, and both are opposites of each other, so it just is arbitrary what you call plus and what you call minus. But once you have the one state and the other state, you also have the transition from the one state to the other and from the other state back to the one again. So in the boundary transition, you will always have four elements. If you have a boundary, then there will be the one side of the boundary and the other side of the boundary. Boolean algebra, Boolean logic calls that yes or no, or the one and the zero. Evidently, if you have a zero and you turn it sideways, you see a one. Turn it a quarter turn again and you see a zero again. So basically, the one and the zero are different phases of the same principle, and the word God, the word I God, refers to that change of phase at the quantum level. And when you have a boundary, the one side could be plus, the other side could be minus, the one side could be one, the other side could be zero, the one side could be yes, the other side could be no, but if you flip sides, they will just be the opposite of each other. So it is the same, but in its inverse form. So you have this, the thing and the inverse thing at the same time, and that is what is defined by a singularity. You have the thing and its opposite combined in one. That's what the singularity is about. So the word God refers to the singularity, so the boundary has that, one side and the other. But you have not only the one side or the other, but you also have the boundary, which is, say, if you could call it yes and no, or maybe it could be the one or the other. No, it's the one and the other. But you have also something else which you cannot define and cannot describe, which is not yes and not no, and it is not yes and not no, it's not the boundary, but it's the environment in which all of this takes place. Not yes, not no. So in a boundary transition, you always have four elements, and that's also why I refer to the word I God rather than the word God, because if you use the word God only, you miss out the key to connecting them all. You need that fourth element of the I, the integration in the environment. You need to contextualize it, because otherwise it is meaningless what's come out of it. You need to be able to connect one moment of creation to any other moment of creation. You need to link it to the singularity, which is what the I stands for. It's the inversion point. So in the word I God, you then are actually dealing with the principle of creation of the boundary, of creation of an inversion point. You're actually describing a singularity, whether you can see it or not. And once you have that understanding, then the whole notion of God becomes very logical. And actually you have the direct link between religion and science. Because now you can see that the quantum change, which is the foundation of the change of polarity, which is the essence of the nature of a boundary, which is the fundamental principle of forming something in creation, it's all the same. And once you understand how this works, then you can also see that if you do a quantum flip, then in a quantum field, if you have that operate on a quantum field, the whole field will flip charge. This is really fascinating how this is simplified and described in tetrionics. It's a really powerful model of understanding how, from the quantum level upwards, the whole universe can be understood to be built up. So at this level, we can then see that when you flip a quantum, which you can do by freedom of choice as well, cells are able to do that, then the plane in which that quantum exists will repolarize. Tetrionics explains very neatly how that is. Quantums have plus and minus charges. In a field, if you flip one charge, the charge of the whole field will be changed because of the change of that flip of one quantum. That's defined by the cohesion, the integrity of the quantum field. So the flip of the quantum will create a shock wave. That shock wave we call energy. It is a one-dimensional transition in universal space. When that shock wave continues, you will have a traveling wave, and a traveling wave is what we call time. When that traveling wave reverberates on another shock wave plane, it can bounce between the two shock waves, just like you have a light flash in a laser device caught between two mirrors. And that will result in a standing wave, which we call space. So the word God at that level refers to the relationship between the information space and the phase domain. The flip of the quantum in that level will create an energy change, which can then lead to a process of time, which can then create the coherence of space. So consciousness, energy, time, and space, CETS, CETS, is the principle of manifestation in the universe. And evident, if we are talking about the manifestation of the universe, we're talking about the universal principle of creation, which is based on the change of phase, polarity of phase in phase space. We are talking about the principle of God, I-God. So we now see that the I-God principle, or the Ketz principle, consciousness, energy, time, space, describes materialization of the universe. As I keep on adding, in physics you would describe that at the photon leap, the electron oscillation, electron bonding. So the God principle is actually also that zipper of creation, of the photon leap, electron leap, electron oscillation, electron bonding. So the God principle is actually also that principle of going from phase space through the energy domain into the time domain into the space domain. So when we are dealing with that, we're actually operating phase space in the same way the alchemist describes, from fire to air to water to earth, solid, which we now would call the information space, the atomic electromagnetic interaction, the molecular electron flow, and the material fixed electron structures. So the God principle applies to all of that. But as it applies to all of that for the creation of material structure, but also for the creation of lacunations in the material structure, as I refer to the bicycle, where you can turn the pedals and crank the wheel so that the other wheel can freely turn, and then you can see that everything in the universe has been created by that principle of flipping the charge of a quantum. And I really recommend the study of tetrionics for this, because this is a very beautiful geometric model which describes how this God principle operates from phase space to the atomic energy levels, to the molecular dynamic levels, to the material structure levels. So once you realize that this principle of creation is at the foundation of the universe, that the God principle is actually the dynamic by which, out of the void space, as all of the religions tend to describe it, There is first this emergence of something undefined. Astrophysics called it a Van Oort gas cloud. It's actually a thunder charged cloud with, at the atomic level, you would look at the protons, the neutrons, and the electrons. But in the Van Oort gas cloud, they are not yet connected as atoms. So it is just a plus, minus, and zero charge cloud, a big thunder cloud with, of course, lightning charges discharging between them. And as a result of these lightning charge discharges interacting with each other, there will be, at very defined spaces, ball lightnings, which we then call the stars. So the God principle creates the Van Oort primordial gas in the universe. The God principle, by the connection of the charge discharges, creates this ball lightnings, which we call the stars. And by the God principle, in the stars, then these plus and minus and zeros combine to form atoms of different kinds, and they can then condense into what we call planets. So in that sense, yes, the God principle is the universal force of creation. But now the religious model is connected to the scientific model, that you can actually see how this God principle puts everything in motion and puts everything in its place. It's all about charge fields, charge polarities, charge potentials, how you can calculate them. Radio diagrams is a very nice way to portray how all of this works. System theory shows how you can actually understand it in the way the information leads to regulation, leads to processes, leads to states. So when you understand that alchemy actually is this same principle, then again you see the I-God principle in the relationship between plasma, gas, liquid, and solid, which the alchemist called fire, air, water, and earth. And you see that it's all still about this relationship between the photon leap, electron oscillation, electron bonding, that from physics at the atomic level to the molecular level to the physical level, things take shape. So the I-God principle operates at all of these levels. And then, of course, once you understand that, the alchemy applies to each of those levels. So in phase space, the God principle applies at the level of the flip of the quantum in the tetrionic quantum field. At the energy level, you can see that the flip of the charge is what specify how one atom can connect to another other atom or will disconnect. At the molecular level, you can see how these connections between atoms are stable or unstable. And in the material structure, you can then see how the matter, the structure of matter, still interacts with this electromagnetic radio information quantum field. So the God principle is then suddenly very specific and very defined. Of course, that means that if this universal God principle operates in the creation of everything, then it also operates in the manifestation of everything. It also operates in the materialization of everything. But that also means that everything that exists is literally and really an expression of God, or this I-God principle. So in that sense, as mysticism says, if it exists, then it's okay with God, so why should you have an opinion about it? In that sense, we are all part of this I-God principle, but this I-God principle also is active and operates all around us. Not just you emerged out of this I-God principle, but your whole environment emerged out of the same I-God principle as well. So if you think that you're okay, then you must by implication agree that everything else is okay too. So everybody else is okay too, because everybody else too came out of this I-God principle. And so that's where you can see that in religions, and specifically the social political organization of religions in what's called churches, or the specific application of churches in localized social community setting, which is then called a cult, they use this God principle as the definer of everything is as it is, for the simple reason that the I God principle has created it as it is by this universal I God principle. So it is the principle which from faith space produces this, and principle here is not principle as Machiavelli described it, the leader, the ruler, the lord, but principle as physics or mathematics describes it, as science describes it. It is the fundamental property of the universe as it exists. So there is no hierarchy and there is no domination. That, of course, is where we see that over the ages the universal principle of creation was reinterpreted and misunderstood to be confused with a slave master, with a political figure of domination. And that is where we have this whole other side of the I God story, which is basically contained in the story of the Dogon. Anthropologists found that the Dogon 40,000 years ago already has an understanding of the creation of the universe. They have a very detailed description of universal creation at a much more refined and defined level than string theory has it now. And Laird Scranton stumbled into this as a computer transcoder. He was able to reformulate computer programs from one language to another. And as it turns out, computer languages address the capacities of computers in different ways. And as computers developed, the capacities of the computers were different in the different development phases of computing as well. So in transcoding, you cannot translate from one language to the other, from one word to the other. You need to go from translation to interpretation. You need to understand what it means, and then express that same in the other language. So there is a very important difference between translation, as Google Translate does, you replace one word by another. But interpretation is you go back to the meaning and then express that meaning in a different context. So the God principle is always at the level of interpretation and expression of meaning. It is at the level of the principles, not at the level of the forms. So the Dogon were aware of that. They had a description of universal creation at the level of cosmic creation, at the superstring theory, and Laird Scranton recognized that due to his practice with transcoding. He realized that what the Dogon described in their mythology was the same as what is described in superstring theory and science. His books are a good read, and then you can also see that the cosmic cosmological science of the Dogon, which was transmitted in two ways, the general form of the stories of, say, Santa Claus, in fact Sinterklaas, which is about a white dwarf, a white giant and a black dwarf, which is the Sirius star system from which the Dogon said that they have their information. And those stories of the white giant and the black dwarf survived in the story of Sinterklaas and Zwarte Piet, as the Dutch call it, Sancti Claus and Zwarte Peter, as the Germans would call it, the Hopi Indian have two katsunas, a tall white and a small black one, who come down from the mountain. So many cultures have this same notion as the Dogon have. And the importance is that the knowledge was disseminated using a popularized version, such as this folklore beliefs, and an initiated version of the story, which was taught to the priest. So like a radar dish, there was the general disseminated information. I like the microphone in the radar dish. It was a specific initiation training of the priests. And between the two, that information of the Dogon was transmitted from the Dogon to the Egyptians, to the Syrians, to the Greeks, to the Romans, and into Europe. But on the way, you can see that the story of the Dogon, which was about cosmic creation and the principle of cosmic creation, became disseminated in Syria and Assyria, and on the one side in Egypt on the other hand. So that led to, say, the Babylonian culture on the one side, the Egyptian culture on the other side. The Babylonians picked up more on the genetics and the psychic, say, magic part of it, specifically the sexual magic, which of course connects to the genetics and the cultivation of the earth, hanging gardens of Babylon, which were actually in Nineveh. And then on the other hand, you have the Egyptian use of that same technology, which was more in the astrophysics, the building of the pyramids, which are like an search antenna combining two different rocks so that the electromagnetic properties of the rocks create a stable antenna effect, as a result of which they were able to use electromagnetic field operations at large distances. As part of those developments in these two cultures, there was also a shift in the use of the word God, because at some point the word God became anthropomorphized. It was no longer the universal principle of creation, but it became connected to the model of the slaveholder, and that has to do with the story of the fight between the desert tribe and the delta tribes, as described by John DeMeo in his book Sahar Asia. That at some point the desert tribe took over the delta tribe. Upper Egypt was combined with Lower Egypt. The shepherd staff of the meat eaters of the desert, and the flail of the vegetarians of the delta became the two symbols of the pharaohs. And at some point the pharaohs decided that they would be better than humans, they would be called gods. And at that level, the cosmic principle of creation was suddenly connected to an individual, which led to a lot of confusion. But it originated out of this original dispersion of the knowledge of the Dogon, that the popular version of the story and the initiate version of the story, so the priest had the other part of the story, but the priests were, say, the pivot for the knowledge of everybody, and not in that sense the slaveholders of everybody. So it's only after the desert tribe overtook the delta tribes that this notion of this model of keeping animals for slaughter was applied to the model of having slaves in humanity. And that's also where the pharaoh became a slave keeper, and the model of God became that of a lord, became that of telling you what to do, became the model of this is how things are. And of course that led to conflicts, and this is most clearly exemplified in the difference between the Egyptians and the Babylonians. In Egypt, at some point, the whole notion of the different principles of universal creation, which had come from the Dogon and which had been put in a series of temples along the Nile. The Nile, in a way, was like the spinal cord in our body, and the temples were like the different chakra system or the different organ glands in our body. So the pineal gland and the hypophysis, thalamus, hypothalamus, and in that way all of these temples had these different organic functions. They in a way elaborated different spectrum of the knowledge of the Dogon. So in Upper Egypt it was more at the level of the cosmic understanding, and in Lower Egypt down the river it was at social understanding. In between there was this genetic understanding, and there was this healing understanding. So the temples in Egypt all had those different qualities. But at some point, at the time of, as it is said, Akhenaten, or Akhenaton in Thebes, also known as Oedipus, there was this understanding that all of these temples still need to be part of that same original understanding of the Dogon, that everything is one same principle. And that became then interpreted as monotheism. And evidently the Jewish religion is the sequel of that Egyptian religion. The Jewish story is an Egyptian story at its basis. So David is Tut. The three letters are just pronounced differently in the one culture and the other. But the Egyptian story was kept in the Hebrew story or the Judean story. It that then got cross-connected with the Babylonian story. But in a way, there was a confusion which came in, which was seen at the time that the Greeks, which had been pulled into Egypt as the tax collectors, and then they took over Egypt as the Ptolemaeans. So the Egyptians were replaced by the Greeks, and the Greeks then had this notion that they should play God, so that the pharaoh was not a human anymore, but a god. And of course, that requires the model of a hierarchy. So if you have a family and you say that the father in the family is dominant, which comes from the desert tribes, as John DeMeo pointed out in his book Saharasia, so then the village elder would be the dominant for the village, and the pharaoh would be dominant for the country. But then if there's something wrong in the village, in the family, you can say, well, the father was the cause of that. And if something is wrong in the village, you can say, well, the village elder was the cause of that. If something goes wrong in the country, you can say the pharaoh was the cause of that. But if you can then hide behind the notion of a god and pretend that there is a god who tells you what to do, then the pharaoh hides behind the priest, which hides behind a god, but the god is not there. So if you look at the social hierarchy, the pyramid of the social structure, then you can see that there is no top to that pyramid, because the god figure is an idea, but it is the generalization of this god principle. But the god principle, the I-God principle, is simply about universal creation. And in that principle of universal creation, everybody is created out of the same process in the same manner. And it only gets confused or confusing when suddenly there is a guy from a desert tribe who says, okay, now this is where we use a slave system, and now I'm going to tell you what to do. And I am a god, and I tell the pharaoh what to do, and I tell the village elders what to do, and then the family heads are told what to do. And then suddenly you have a society based on inequality. So that model of inequality has been built into many of the religions. And as you might know, the Egyptian religion led to the Hebrew religion, which led to the Christian religion, which led to the Muslim religion. So all of them have that same knowledge, but all of them also have that same confusion to different degrees of God being the dictator of the universe and the human being the servant of the God, as opposed to God being the universal principle of creation, and there are universal laws that we learn to live with. Evidently, in the Hebrew tradition, you can still see that, because in the Torah, there is the description of the story of creation as it is said to have been created, say the popularized or vulgarized version of the knowledge of the priests. But there is also the Talmud, which says, well, those might be the cosmic laws or the universal laws as we've been given them, but now let's negotiate how we deal with them. So the Talmud is about the interpretation of the law, and there is also the Kabbalah, which is from the Egyptian, the Ka and the Ba, or the spirit and matter, and the body and spirit. And so the body-spirit law is about this relationship between the known and the unknown, or physics and physics, and how we can understand in our body how this works and how our body works with it. So in that sense, Kabbalah is a deeper level of the knowledge of the Hebrew tribes from the Dogon tribes. And it is that part of the Kabbalah which has been passed into the different mystical traditions with different interpretations, just as God was interpreted in the different religions in a different manner, but come back to science as what is now known as the principles of science, as again the relationship between physics and physics in say the quantum field, the atomic field, the molecular field and material field. So then you can see that all of this comes back together again, and just as in the story of the known and the unknown, we are actually living between two different realms, the realms of spirit or pure information, the realm of matter, or the realm of our body. So the realm of spirit and the realm of body are then this relationship between Ka and Ba of the Kabbalah, and in our body we can see the law or the integration sign of equation sign of what happens between all of those levels of manifestation. And that's where the word God or I God is the formulation or the expression of the equation sign. The equation sign is the boundary where the one side of the boundary and the other side of the boundary connects. In the equation sign, you as if see two sides of the boundary and the space in between where it can change from the one side to the other. In the equation sign, you can see that if you move something from the left side of the equation to the right side of the equation, the polarity inverts, so that the equation sign actually is the quantum inversion principle in its dynamic. But as I formulated before, that if there is an inversion of polarity, then that means that the equation sign represents a boundary. And that is where the word God represents the boundary, and the word God represents the equation sign. And in that sense, the principle of I God is the dynamic of the equation sign, where you have yes and no, maybe and I don't know, all connected, the four dimensions of consciousness. And then in the word God, suddenly you see how all of it connects. But the important thing is to realize that the word God is the equation sign. It is in the equation, it is in the transition, it is in the flip of the quantum that things happen. It is out of that principle of I God that things can emerge, but the things that have emerged, the things are seen as if separate from the no-thing. But if they are seen separate from the no-thing, they are no longer connected to the equation sign. They are no longer connected through their singularity to the nothing. So that's where the religion said, well, you need to actually reconnect everything to God. You need to see how the thing that exists connects to everything that doesn't exist, and through that connects to everything else that exists. So in interacting with reality, if you are dealing with a thing, never forget that every else is part of that equation too. So it's not just you interacting with something, and you in that desert tribe model are the slave master of the something, and that's what science has created out of matter. As it was said, science killed God and made Earth a slave, and now scientists and technology are raping Earth and destroying Earth. So you need to reconnect to God and see that we are actually born out of Earth. In that sense, Earth is our mother, and the universe is the womb in which all of this exists. so that we need to reconnect everything to everything else. But the only way that you can connect a thing to something else is by seeing how it originated from something else. So you need to think back from the things. You sort of have to use the reverse mirror, go into time in reverse mode and see how something originated out of wherever it came from, so that you can see how you relate to that too. And sometimes you need to go back all the way. So when you need somebody you don't like, you need to realize that you've two parents who had two parents who had two parents, and at some point you have more parents than there were people in the universe. But that means that all of those parents that you had are also the parents of that other person you're meeting. So that everything does connect. So in that sense, the whole quest of science was an exploration of the finding of God and the discovery of matter, the discovery of molecules, the discovery of of atoms. Then it led to the discovery of the quantum phase. The quantum flip is the I-God principle. The I-God principle is the equator or the equation of everything in manifestation in the universe as a whole. What matters then is that in our thinking we are able to shift our perspective, that when we look at reality as a whole from our beta consciousness, we need to think back to the process by which reality was created, which is what Taoism is about. And we go to the subconscious level of the alpha brain waves, and we need to sort of dream about it. As the Australians say, this is a dream reality. We need to go one level deeper into the atomic level of probabilistic, the unconscious theta brain waves, which is the level of organic creation. That's where we need to identify with the gods of the Olympus, which is what Hinduism is about, which was Taoism is about. So many healing systems refer to that. Astrology is about that. So once you realize that we operate at those deeper levels, the theta brainwaves of creation, then you still need to go to the delta level of deep realization, in which from the cellular consciousness you can see that the cell is the counterpart of the universe as a whole, and that actually the cell membrane is the place where the core of you is connected to the universe as a whole. And then you can see that the double lipid membrane of the cell is like the equation sign between you and the universe. You're the inverse of the universe, and that within your existence you operate that equation sign as the pivot for your participation in creation. So that's the place where you literally operate the I-God principle. In the way you operate in that membrane of the cell, you determine how you generate, operate, destroy the relationship to the environment, and that's where you define how you integrate within that environment, as a creator, as an operator, as a destroyer, or as an integrator. And as an integrator, you are then actually a creator in creation. You exemplify the I-God principle on Earth, which makes you a pope, and therefore a representative of the universal principle of creation there where you are. So that from where you stand, you can then express that. And as I mentioned, that means that you express that from the cellular level, from the delta brainwaves. And then at the level of the organs, you need to see how you can interface that with the environment that you're in, which is where the Greeks said that those are the gods of the universe. Basically, those are the different ways in which we can change our interface, in which we can change our involvement. That's what our organs do. So from the cell level, you go to the organ level and see how you can actually interface that new realization that you have within you, within the body. And then you go to the body level and see how you can incorporate that within you. So if your body can deal with that idea or ideal as you're expressing it in your body, if your body stays healthy, then your body will be the vehicle by which it will express itself automatically into the world around you. So the God principle means that you, from the cell level, into the organ level, into the body level, have the realization that you're part of the universe as a whole. You see how you interface that into your body, in the organ level, and then carry that in your body, as a result of which you can become a pivot of contagious health. So let me round this story off at that level. What I try to describe is something which is indescribable, because what we are dealing with here is how all of the universe is created, how matter came out of molecules, came out of atoms, came out of the voidness of nothing, the phase space that is the foundation of everything is something which is also the foundation of us, and which is much deeper than anything we can see, much deeper than any form of language we can use. And so we can only infer this, we can only represent this by symbols, so we have to be very careful, because the language is never the thing. But once we realize that from this universal level everything is connected, then we can also see how within us, by our decisions, we connect to that, yes or no. And then by our convictions, we hold a specific place in that process of creation. And then by our reflexes in our body, we are actually a manifestation of that. And that, of course, carries out. And then the universe is a mirror for us, the earth in how we do it, and the living beings in how we thought it up. And that's where the old religions always say that this universe has been created so that the gods can discover themselves, and more specifically, that it is the principle by which we can learn to effectively operate our use of freedom of choice, and that, in another word, can be called the I-God principle. So the universe around us, the people around us, living beings around us, mirror us in our capacity and competence to use the I-God principle. And as I mentioned, at the core, the I-God principle is not only the flip of a quantum, but it's also the decision to operate freedom of choice. So that makes the I-God principle quite a pivotal and interesting tool for us to learn to do what we do here on Earth.